I don't feel safe.
He won't leave me alone.
I'm really concerned about my roommate.
How do I file a report?
Can anyone help me?
312, en route for Polly.
This is the Ride Along, created by Campus Security and Public Safety for the Gonzaga community.
Hello, and welcome to the Ride Along, a podcast designed to teach safety, inspire change, and build community. I'm your host, Philip Tyler, Crime Prevention and Education Officer with Campus Security and Public Safety. Today we welcome Taylor Jordan, who is our Cleary Compliance Behavior Intervention Team Coordinator and COVID-19 Coordinator. Today we're going to have a real conversation about this unique skill set, this unique job, this unique individual that assists our campus. Welcome to the Ride Along, Taylor.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
So we are happy to have you here. There's so many things that you do that our campus probably doesn't know about or isn't aware of. So we thought we'd take this opportunity early in the year to share out all those wonderful skills you have. So you're the Cleary Compliance and Behavior Intervention Team Coordinator.
Mm-hmm.
You are the COVID-19 Coordinator.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. So that's a lot of titles and more importantly, a lot of work. So I know that I and the Campus Security and Public Safety appreciate your efforts, but would it be okay if today we just called you Taylor, except all of those titles?
That sounds good to me. I don't even like to tell people my title. It's so long.
Okay, outstanding. So let's start, as we do every podcast, with one thing that you're thankful for today.
Oof. I am thankful for a lot at the moment. I was thinking about this actually this morning. I'm just super thankful to see students coming back to campus and hopefully having the Gonzaga experience that they want and that they deserve.
Amen.
Maybe I'm starting off with a hot take, but kind of in conjunction with that, I'm super thankful for vaccines and thankful that we have so many students coming back poked and ready to kind of create a safer atmosphere to continue doing the wonderful things that they do here.
Yeah. Well, if that's a hot take, I'm right there with you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I wish it wasn't, but it kind of is.
Yeah. Yes, ma'am. So wonderful. So now, you know, I know the history behind Cleary and the Cleary Act and the tragedy of Jean Cleary. But can you tell our listeners about Cleary Compliance, its history, and what functions you complete as the compliance coordinator?
Sure. So the Cleary Act itself is a federal law that was actually developed back in the late 80s, early 90s, after a student named Jean Cleary was murdered and sexually assaulted inside of her residence hall at Lehigh University in 1986, I believe. And following her death, her parents came out and said, you know, there's really no way and no mandate that universities are reporting anything related to crime statistics. And they pushed for greater transparency from colleges and universities towards, you know, sharing what actually happened on their campus so that students and families can make kind of a more knowledgeable decision on where they want to send their students. And so the Cleary Act itself asks a lot of universities. So what I'm doing in the background is I am collecting crime statistics from all of our partners across campus who crimes are reported to them. I'm crafting an annual security report that shares those statistics and also shares policies related to campus safety. I am maintaining a daily crime log. And so if any student or parent is ever interested in what crimes are happening on campus, they can pop into campus security and see what's been going on here over the last few months. I am making sure that the university is issuing timely warnings and emergency notifications. So if something happens on campus, our constituents are being notified in real time. So it's really all about transparency in our campus safety climate and also in our efforts to prevent crime in the same role that you do.
Yeah. Wasn't one of their arguments the family of Ms. Cleary, that had they known about incidents that were occurring in and around that campus, they might have decided not to send them. To that campus.
That was it. So they started to look at the school's history and pull some data and said, we had no idea that this area, this place was as dangerous as it is. So it really is a push for allowing students and their families to have the information to make an informed decision about where they send their precious cargo, right?
Yeah, that's outstanding. Is there a place where our student population can find out information about those things besides coming to the actual office space?
So they can come to the office space. All of our annual security reports are held on the Gonzaga webpage. So if you look up annual security report, or if you're in the security section of our website, you can look up, and each of those reports shares the crime statistics over the last couple of years. So you can see kind of trends in what's going on campus.
Yeah. I know I use those for my work all the time. So I appreciate the work that you do behind that. But that's just one aspect of one of the roles you play here. The other part is the behavior intervention team coordinator. And you know, for crime prevention, sometimes information and intel comes to us via online sources or persons, as we call it, digital exhaust. Can you explain what a behavior intervention team coordinator is for our listeners and how that ties into how you obtain information and keep our students, faculty, and staff safe on campus?
Sure. So the behavioral intervention team, which I'll call BIT from this point forward because it's kind of long, is something that a lot of our campus members don't know about, and that's a goal of mine over the next few years is to create a little more awareness about what the team is and what the team does. So the BIT is essentially a group of multidisciplinary staff members from across campus who are trained to respond to incidents and reports of behaviors on campus from individuals who may pose a threat of physical violence towards themselves or others. And so it really is about kind of the identification of a possible threat, the assessment, the management and response, and then kind of the maintenance of monitoring from that point forward. And so there's a lot of ways in which we intake information and that it comes towards us. So a lot of the time it is coming straight towards campus security. And so our officers receive a report, or the director receives a report of a concern. Another huge source of information for us is the Center for Cura Personalis. So if somebody's reporting a concerning statement or a change in behavior to the CCP, maybe through a refer form, we work really closely with that office to kind of put a more holistic view and see maybe who needs to be the responding party, whether it's CCP or whether it needs to be elevated towards the BIT.
Okay. I love that. And that really builds into this idea of Zags help Zags. Mm-hmm. If they see something that's concerning mm-hmm. in another Zag, they say something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so the kind of the history of BIT teams and threat assessment teams is that, you know, in 2007, April 16th, I want to say, the Virginia Tech shooting happened.
Yeah.
Left 32 people, 33 including the shooter himself, dead that day. And in analyzing that incident so closely, they realized that there were a lot of people across campus who knew little bits of information, but there was no actual venue for folks to come together and say, wait, I've heard this and you've heard this, and maybe there's a little bit of a bigger problem at hand. And so that's what the threat assessment team does, is we try and kind of collect puzzle pieces from across campus to see, okay, now that we've got all of the information actually in one spot, what do we do with it and what does it mean?
I love that. Yeah, crime prevention, we call that leakage. There's yep. always something
a lot of
that led up to this that many people know about. They mm-hmm. just don't say things about. Mm-hmm. So I'm glad you mentioned that, because that's really important for keeping our campus safe. So obviously that's a huge role that you play, but that's only the second role of the three that you play. I'm going to say four because you're a friend to campus security. But let's talk about that third role, which in my opinion, given the last year and a half, has been a really, really vital position. That's the COVID-19 coordinator. And what was your takeaway from your experience as that COVID-19 coordinator, given that that was such a vital role in getting us back to a semblance of normalcy and open campus? And really, thank you for that, first of all, but tell us about that experience.
I mean, my first takeaway is that I'm very tired.
Of the pandemic or just all these multiple roles you're playing?
All of it.
Yes, ma'am.
It was a long year. But I think my biggest takeaway, again, is that just like you mentioned, that Zags help Zags peace. And I always acknowledged when I had conversations with students that needed to enter isolation or quarantine, I was the first to say, you know what? This sucks. Hmm. It sucks so bad. And I wish that I wasn't having this conversation with you.
That part, yes.
I wish it wasn't happening, but here's where we're at. And here's how you can act and move forward to create a safe place for not only your fellow students, but your professors, the person who is cooking and serving your breakfast. And I think that's where there were a few hiccups where students maybe thought like, well, I'm fine. I feel okay. What's the big deal? But trying to contextualize it in not only a broader Gonzaga community, but also in the broader Spokane community and saying, hey, if you're grabbing breakfast at Chaps over the weekend or someone's pouring you a beer at Jack and Dan's, you want to protect those people too. So let's, you know, Zags help Zags and also keep Spokane a better and healthier place while we're at it.
Because we did see, at least in the media, now, you know, whether you agree with the numbers or not, there was some articles in the media that, you know, our universities had a cause mm-hmm. in some of the spike in our numbers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There were a lot of cases in that, 18 to 25 range. Not to say that that was all college students, because of course we know that Spokane has a lot of other folks in that range who are not attending Whitworth or Gonzaga, but definitely contributors to a spike at a certain point. I would not deny that.
Sure. Yeah. We hope that your role as that coordinator this year even goes out even further to get in contact with them, get in front of them, as you suggested, mm-hmm. so they understand exactly what you spoke about today. Mm-hmm. I know that I've been thankful. I know the university's been thankful and our department's been thankful for the role you've played in there. So three amazing roles, one person covering all those roles, outstanding. But I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you, just like I asked in our first session with our former GSBA president, Fasay Alongo, representation matters. And you are one of two administrative women within the campus, broader campus security, public safety organization umbrella. From your standpoint, as a female professional, do you feel your representation matters, and do you feel you receive the same level of respect as your male counterparts or peers?
Sure. So to that first question, I think that it absolutely matters. I take great pride in serving under a female campus security director.
Yeah, we know Becky Wilkie, yes.
She's the best, and we know that that's very rare. But especially in such a male driven field, it's cool to be taking up space in this area. And I also am a very strong proponent of trying to incorporate what some people may consider more female, or how do I want to say this? There are just a lot of attributes that folks don't necessarily associate with safety and security that I think the world would be a better place if we would. And so driving forward with empathy and compassion,
yeah,
and a little bit more gentility,
okay,
I think.
Yes.
I think it's important.
How about de-escalation?
De-escalation, yeah. Exactly. And not to approach every scenario with machismo, right? So I take pride in bringing a little bit more of an even keeled and maybe even more of an emotion focused attitude towards my work. In terms of receiving the same level of respect as my male peers, I do think that I have to work a little bit harder, and more so I think that I have a lot of work in the first meeting with someone. I think there's a lot of pressure when I have a first conversation to really prove that I know my stuff.
Oh boy.
Because after that, I feel fine.
Yeah.
But I have had instances or moments where I really do have to prove myself in order to be taken seriously. I think aside from Gonzaga being a woman at a threat assessment conference, you're maybe outnumbered 1 to 25.
I'll be damned.
I walk in the room and I'm surrounded by 55-year-old cops. And that's okay. It's what it is, and we're working towards progress. But I definitely want and feel a pressure to present myself as really knowledgeable and really competent right from the start. I always take a little bit of a laugh because I have a very gender neutral name. And so if I'm emailing someone, or someone says, "Oh, call Taylor," I have come across a lot of folks who are surprised when they hear a female voice on the other end of the line, or when
picture on your email signature. Yeah, so you're one of those unique employees like myself that has two first names, two last names. So
yep.
So it could be either. I'm not certain who this person is.
Yeah.
You know, I love that you speak to that, because, you know, You walk around our campus and you see a lot of these signs on our campus. And one of the signs you see is innovation happens here, right on campus. And I think campus security, behavior intervention, Cleary coordinator, compliance coordinator, and COVID-19 coordinator, yourself and Becky, that's innovative. We have two women in leadership positions within this organization, and we are setting the standard. And it really does change the mindset of officers that are working here. You talked about empathy. You talked about, you know, compassion, you know, listening skills, communication. All those things help. And that's why we love the diversity of the team here, and you being one of our team members. We really, really enjoy you here. So, wow. Your skills. Varied. You have a depth of knowledge, a breadth of knowledge that many don't have within our department or our campus. But how do people access your skills or services, Taylor? Do they request them individually? Are your services predicated on intel or generated reports from campus security and public safety? How do people get in contact with Taylor? How do they know Taylor exists?
Sure. So I would say the majority of our BIT cases are predicated either through CSPS reports and responding to reporting parties, or they are coming through refer forms, which are jointly managed by the Center for Cura Personalis and AAA. If folks want to reach out to me directly, I always welcome that. And we also have a BIT reporting form on the MyGU page. And the beauty of that is that it allows folks to report anonymously.
Yes.
And so I know that's a large concern for our student population, concerning retaliation or a little bit of guilt in reporting.
Sure.
Because a lot of times with BIT cases, they're gut driven, or they are, we've had a lot of people say, I don't know if this is something.
Sure.
Or, you know, it doesn't feel like a big deal. And so that allows people to kind of report snippets that I hold on to and that our team holds on to in case, you know, we ever have another report come through in the future. And so there is an anonymous report that students and staff and faculty can access on the MyGU page.
Wonderful. And the real benefit of that, really for our listeners out there, is you don't have to feel guilty if you're sharing something from the gut that just seems odd, mm-hmm. because we have professionals like yourself mm-hmm. that will determine if that information reaches a threshold for intervention. Would that be an accurate assessment?
Exactly.
Yeah. So there'd be no guilt in share it.
Yep.
And if there's nothing there, then you won't respond, or yep. your team won't respond. If there's something there, we may have averted something, mm-hmm. i.e. like Virginia Tech,
mm-hmm.
right? So that's the benefit of that. Awesome. So you talked about how they can get a hold of you and how they can contact you directly. Can you tell us, going forward, you talked about how you're going to get out there and show the world, the broader world outside of campus security and your BIT team, where you exist, how you exist. Talk about some plans for the future for that, and how students would be more engaged with this process, these three sure. processes.
I mean, I think one of the major components of what needs to be understood within our student population, and even within our staff and faculty population, is what am I looking for?
Mm.
What are kind of our warning signs and our red flags and things that kind of make your eyes open up a little bit wider, and just kind of a laundry list of things is we're looking for, obviously, communicated or written threat language. We're looking for violent ideation in any form, whether that's written, journal. We've had professors submit concerning essays in the past of students who kind of went off topic and shared some concerning content. We're looking at social withdrawal or paranoia. So if you have a friend who you saw regularly and all of a sudden they have no interest in social interaction, we're looking for kind of self identified victimhood or martyrdom, folks who are fighting for a cause and see themselves as a victim. We're looking for an increased drug or alcohol use. We're looking for a history of violence is obviously a clear one, whether that be towards people or towards animals. There's a whole giant list of things that we're kind of checking for.
Okay.
But for students to kind of pay attention to their peers. And the biggest thing with threat assessment really is a change over time.
Okay.
So not just a snapshot, but to say, hey, this person was here, and now they're here. And what the BIT team wants to do is we want to stop them at that stage, and we don't want them to kind of progress towards that pathway towards violence.
Love it. So this is it. All of your roles, you interact with the entire campus. This is not just for our student population. Mm-hmm. This is for our students, our staff, our faculty, even our visitors and guests, would we say. Okay, would you say, as we're closing this out, this current academic year poses some unique circumstances given the pandemic, given their isolation, given their disconnection? Could we say, and I'm not asking you to predict, Taylor, but might we see some different behaviors coming because of all of this? I mean, it's almost the perfect tempest, right?
Sure.
Of all these things coming together.
I think we can. I mean, one of the interesting kind of parts about COVID is that we started to communicate and started to interact with our peers in a different way through a different lens. And I think, you know, unfortunately, faculty members weren't able to interact with their students face to face, and there's only so much information that you can pull from the other side of a Zoom screen, right? And so now we'll have people kind of re-encountered after a year of isolation, and that presents an opportunity to say, hey, this person's a little bit different than I remember them.
Okay.
But hopefully that's not the case.
And yes, we're crossing our fingers.
That we ease back into this semester in a successful way. But it definitely is a joint community responsibility to kind of be on the lookout and be caring for others.
Okay. I'm going to give you one last opportunity for that hot take as our COVID-19 coordinator, because I am in complete agreement with your statement. What would you say to our campus returning as our COVID-19 coordinator?
I think it's important to approach this year again with a lot of empathy, knowing that there are some people who for medical reasons can't get vaccinated. So to show those folks some additional respect and care, but really just asking students to give it their all and be flexible. We've seen a lot of changes in guidance even over the last couple of weeks, and we know that it's kind of ever changing, and we're learning more as we go. So to kind of be flexible, give us grace, give yourselves grace, and
yes,
just kind of do what you can to keep others around you safe and keep yourself safe.
Yes, Zags help Zags. Well, thank you so much, Taylor, for joining us and sharing your story and your wisdom. I mean, I've learned a lot just today in our half hour together. And thank you to our listeners for riding along with us for today's episode. We hope you found something useful. Please share, like, and subscribe to The Ride Along on Instagram, Twitter, and Mixcloud. And until next time, Zags, we'll see you when we see you.
See ya.